Okay, this is Mary Beland and Doris Dian at the Immokalee Reservation talking with Ethel Santiago on Wednesday, November 18th, 1981. Ethel, I'd like to know something about the sweetgrass basketry. Could you tell me where that came from and how it got started?
When it was first started, or
yes, when it was first started.
Well, I was told that by my step-grandmother that I didn't go to school, so it was part of my education to learn everything I can from my step-grandmother. And I was taught by her that the first baskets they used to make was made out of palmetto stem. Then, and that's the only kind of basket they used to make. Then later on, they were introduced by they're Seminoles, but they called Creeks. Like they're the one that was making a sweetgrass basket. So then after that, you know, they learned how they did that, and then they start, you know, making a sweetgrass basket. That's what she told me. So as long as I remember, they were making, you know, when I came to realize what they were doing, they were already making. And but they used to do with a different strings. It's a strings they made their own from some kind of a plant. But now I don't think if we can find any now, and so since they start using that, what they call it, crochet thread, or start doing that, so then I learned it from how to make basket from my mother and my step-grandma, and mostly it was, since we didn't go to school or anything, it was like part of our learning and a lot of part of our education that somehow we could. Well, mainly the first time they used to use that palmetto stem for the basket, it was used for gathering peas or vegetables from a garden, and also to pick corn, and you know, you can shell your corn when it dry up in it. Then we ground the corn up. And you, some has a flat and some had a deeper, but it had little holes. And then when you grind your corn, you shake it and get the best part and all that. And that's what it was used for. But mm-hmm. later on, when the Indians are getting more with the non-Indians and they were taking interest in the baskets, then they start ordering if they could, you know, buy some. So that's when they start selling them. Basket to them, and it got where most of the latest income was coming from that, making baskets and stuff like that. And that's where it's been handed down for generations to generations, because they told me my great-grandmother used to be real good making basket with palmetto stem. And I had seen her work, but that's when my grandfather used to live out in Everglades. Then when he left there, he couldn't come out. You had to walk about 15 miles out of that place, 15 or 20 miles out of that place to the nearest.
Ethel, tell me who your great-grandmother, what was her name?
Miami Billy. Well, she outlived five husbands, so she was Jim, then she was another name, then she was, the last one, she was Miami Billy. Her name was Miami Billy, just like Miami.
How old did she live to be?
She lived 100 and something, about that tall, about the size of chicken. And it seems about her size, still a picture of her. Then they said she outlived most of her daughters too. And she I have seen her some work that she did, but like I said, my grandfather used to stay way out in the woods, and he couldn't carry everything out. He had his, have you ever seen those cane mill and all that? He left everything there in his canoes, and before he got a chance to go back, somebody went in and took everything. And some of those baskets were in there. And but they weren't using it anymore, so they used to just have it, you know, where we could see it, what she used to do.
What happened to the palmetto stem baskets? Why aren't they still being made?
Well, after a few moments, a few of those older ladies knows how to make it, are not teaching the younger generation, and I think that's where it died out. But I wanted to go and learn, because I learned some how to do that when I was a little girl, but I didn't do it so long. I know how to do it, but I don't know how to end it when I get to the end part. So what I really like to do is go back into it and see if I can do that. But if the program's over, then I have time to go back and do that.
Bert Billy
is my step-grandmother.
Is your step-grandmother.
And Tommy Jumper is my mother's cousin. She's a daughter of my grandmother's sister's.
And Bert Billy, her eyesight's failing, but she still remembers how to make the palmetto stem basket. Would there be any possibility that she could show you?
Yes, she told me she could show me if I could, you know, because her fingers, she has arthritis or something that she can't do like she used to. But she said she can, you know, instruct me how to do it if I can. So after the job's over, or even if I do get funded, I'm going to make time and go over there and see if I can, you know, learn how to do that. Since I already know most of the halfway, how to end it is the main thing that I'd like to learn.
Is there a name for the pattern that's in that palmetto stem basket?
Only thing I know is they just call it calipé. It means it's that flat when you flap it up and down, get the good part of corn where what do you call it when they put it in those you send the pictures of how they got in that kind of big old, look like a log standing inside, and you got that thing and you mash on it, and it you grind it up. It's like a grinder, but it's a, you do that, and that's what you used. And you have to take, like, when you take a corn on the end where they were used to be connected to the corn, it's got a hard bitter stuff in there, and when you do that, you shake it and get all that off, and that's what they call it, calipé. Then shagale means like a something is got a lot of holes in it, and that's what they call it, where you shake it, where get the biggest part than the small one. Like when you get grits, you know, you come and you get them in small size, and you get them in a coarse grits. They got two different sides. That's how they, you know, and that's how they, you know, did that. And that's what, that's the only thing I know. That's what they used to call it. So
was there any other style of basket that was made out of the palmetto stems?
This one I have seen. It was hooked to the, this is where they can hook to the, you know, cypress posts, a real light, small ones. They were tied to the buckskin, and it had a kind of big, long thing in the back that you could tote it on your back if you was going to long ways, you know, like if you went to, sometimes when they make a garden or something, they go about 5-10 miles from the place, or if they're harvesting, then if they got a relative live 10 or 15 miles, then they have to go and harvest with them. When they do, they have to bring the stuff back, and I used to see them carry it on their back, but I have never seen another one like that. But I remember my step-grandmother used to have. She probably left it back there in the woods too, but she used to carry it on her back. And attached to the cypress tree with that palmetto stem basket. It had a very thin buckskin. You know, she can make her own. She knows how to take, like, when they kill a deer, she can take that, take, like, they didn't have too many strings to tie anything with back then, so she used to take all those, they kill a deer, she would make that a really soft deer heart. It'd be real soft. And she, mm-hmm. you can cut them in a little piece of string, use them like a string.
Mm-hmm.
They're real tight. I mean, they're strong. You hold them for a long time. That's right. You know, like pieces like you got on your shoes and all that. They'd be soft, though.
This is hard. What about the sweetgrass baskets? I've seen so many different shapes and styles. Where do the different patterns come from for those?
Well, before they used to copy each other. So when I was a little girl, I used to see you see somebody else making it, cop it off of there and make it like that. And most when I was a little girl, I used to see them in about same shape or same look alike or all that. Then as the years go on, and then the other ladies get the idea that I'm going to create my own, what I want to create with a basket or grass. It's the same way with a patchwork. You know, they used to send, like, I remember when I was a little girl, when I go to corn dance, green corn dance, I used to see just about every lady, including my mother, have about the same pattern of their long dresses and all that. But now, today's modern woman, they don't want to wear the same patchwork. Like, like you got same patchwork on, I don't want to do that. You know? I have seen a lady going to Christmas church one day, about 2 years ago. She came to the church with about same design, like her skirt was on there. Then she must have had another one on there. She went over there and she went somewhere and changed it and come back, you know. But back those old days, older days, they used to wear just about, you know, about the same and, same patchwork. Look like they look alike. But after that, they start creating what they want to do, what kind of patchwork they want to do.
Well, can you tell, just by looking at someone's basket, can you tell maybe what reservation it comes from or what camp? Or can you sometimes even tell who made
it? The most people that I'm familiar with that makes basket, I can take one look and know who it is or where it come from. But there's a very few that I don't know, and especially that ladies just starting out. I'm not talking about young girls. I'm talking about somebody in their 50s. They start mm-hmm. learning how to, you know, like Mary Jo, she start learning when she's, I guess she's close to 60 now. And she, you know, she just learned how to make basket. People like that, you know, when they start taking up basket and making, I can tell, I mean, I can hardly tell it, but I know it's not a, you can tell it right away if that person has been doing it for years or they just start. And, most of people, most of the ladies that make basket, like Alice Osola, and that's Alice Robert Osola's wife. And there's another Alice Osola, that's Harjo's wife. It's two brothers married to two ladies named Alice. That I know that I can tell them apart. And I can't think of her name now, but she's Mrs. Lena Billy, the one lives in Hollywood. I can tell her work. And also, I can tell my mother's work. Tell my aunt Mary and Lucy I can tell my daughters, and I can tell Sally's, and I can tell Donna, my sister,
mm-hmm.
can tell her work, and I can tell Mary Joseph, which I taught her, and Louise, she knew how, but she haven't done it so long she forgot, but since she started coming back to this program, she started again, and says I can tell her work. She does beautiful work. Jordan probably have some, because you don't see too many of her work, but only two people I know, Jordan and Pete Osola, probably have it, because she don't sell it too. I mean, she sells it, but, you know, she just take her time and make it.
With the sweetgrass baskets, do you use those also in your home?
Is there a special at home?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you can use it like a fruit basket, or you can put it up like a decoration, or like I got a wall decorations that I have at home that are hanging on a wall, and also you can lay it on a table and be grass. You can make it square, or you can make it round. Then you can make your basket and put a phone in and put artificial flowers and set on it. I have, we do that.
Mm-hmm.
And we decorate with the homes, office or something like that. Pincher holders, we put them in the office. Or,
mm-hmm.
or something that we just want to set on the office, we do that.
I've noticed that some of the sweetgrass baskets in the bottom, they start just off with the sweetgrass, and some start off with the palm fiber.
Uh-huh.
That goes, what was the earliest basket? Which one came first?
With the palmetto.
Well,
with the palmetto fiber in the middle.
Was the first style?
Uh-huh, was the first style.
Which is the most popular?
Both are most popular, but... if the top has a hat on it, with an Indian lady hat on it. But today I find out that it takes more time and work, but the all grass are really, I mean, it seems like they like that more than they do. You take your time and make it. But like everything, you have to take your time and make it. You just don't throw it together. When somebody does that, throw it together, you can see it right there.
Mm-hmm.
That they just throw it together. And that's one thing I always try to get the girls learn how to do that, is not to throw it together. Just put it right and take your time and do it. I said, I can start a basket and finish it in maybe an hour, and you're going to sit there all day and tomorrow. But I've been on it, you know, for so many years that I can do that. But I said, don't try to, you know, compare with me. Take your time. Then when you learn, after you learn everything, then you might make it faster than I will.
What do you look for when you're looking for a good basket? What are some of the things that would make a basket good?
If the basket's already made?
Mm-hmm.
Well, what I usually look, if I was to go in a place where they got a lot of baskets, not only sweetgrass basket, but if you was to look, you know, all different tribe has made the basket. Sometimes you can see poor work in there, then you can see good work in there. Somebody may take their time and make it. And like sweetgrass, they didn't take time to select the grass. Or when they pulled the grass, they didn't take their time cleaning it, or when they were drying it. You can tell it shows up in them, that you know that person was in a hurry, or either didn't know how long you're supposed to let it dry, or how to take care of it. Then that's what I look at, you know, and especially when the stitch that they put together. Like, let's say this was stitched together was by Mary. And what I have tried to explain it to her, that when you put in a basket, when you add in more grass, you must never, I mean, sometimes it will show, but if you're very careful, you don't see where they put more grass inside, but sometimes you can see it in a lot of baskets, that a lot of that shows. That's what I look at it, and the way they put the stitch together. The knot they put it in, like here, it's sitting here, that's what I had explained to her. About this, I would have sold this, but the reason it's sitting here because we dropped it in the mud the other day after. But it's dry now. It had been raining, and you don't see it. But she made that, and it's a and you try to put the same amount of the grass as you go, and as I was telling the class when we was in Miami, that if you put too much on one side and too little on one side, your basket's gonna be lopsided, or it'll be set like this. And you seen how some baskets, that's what That's what I be telling the girls. I said, that's why you always got to learn how to feel how much grass you got there. And you stand, you know how much. If you learn how to make how to stitch, how many stitches you can go, then add more grass. Then if you forget about it and keep going, then next thing you know, you're going to have a lump-sided basket.
This basket's real hard. Is that the sign of a good basket?
Yeah, it's pretty good. She's doing real good. She does real good, except she has scissors sometimes. When she does that, it's very hard for her to make it, but, you know, tell her to take her time. That's Mary Jo's work.
When a basket is soft, why is it soft?
That should be soft when the person is first learning how to make it, because they don't know how to hold the grass firm like they should, or hold the stitches like they should. Because on one hand, you're going to hold the grass and also hold your stitches at the same time while you're making the stitches. So it's like that in the first 2 or 3 weeks of a person who's making the basket, it's going to be a soft lump side. But after 3 or 4 weeks, it's going to improve. And then that's why they soft. But I have seen ladies where they make basket for a long time, and I would feel it, but that's the first thing I do sometimes when I see a basket. I would feel it to see how firm they are. And most of the lady that knows how to make baskets, they kind of firm. You see some soft one, that's like the first learning.
Where does the sweet grass come from, and how do you gather it?
It comes from Florida. It goes far as... It grows all over the Florida. I've never got it any outside of the... out of Florida. And it doesn't grow in a swamp, because it will not survive in there. There's some, what we call imitated sweet grass, because they look like it. But when you pull them, they break. Then when you dry them, they crumble. Or you can't, do nothing with it. But this is, you find it in white sand places, or like a pine trees over there with palmettos, a higher ground. And like places by the beach, on the palmettos along the beach, you find a lot of them there. But
when's the best time of year to gather?
Summer. Start in late spring till late September. Right now they're doing pretty good since we don't have frost. October, it'll go into that, but when it goes into October, they will start getting spots and browns, and but starting like May or last of May, and May, June, mm-hmm. June and July and August and September are the best time, because they grow long and green, and like everything else, they are, I guess when they get wet, you can pull them all right, but by this time, it's kind of hard to pull. They break or either. You have to watch them when you pull them. I guess they're the same thing like any other plants. They're like that.
After you pull it, what do you do with it?
What do? You go and pull it, and then you bring it back. Then you wash it clean. Then you dry it about, let's say, 6-7 hours a day till about 4 or 5 days. If no rain, sunshine like all day today with a good wind, and just it may be 4 or 5 days. But if it rains, where you have to be bringing in about 3 hours, it might take about 7 days. Then after it's ready, then you just go ahead and then you can tell it it's when it's ready, because it be the grass be kind of light. Then then when you bend it, or making it circle or something around, it doesn't break, or it doesn't hardly break anyway. Unless you really want to break it, then you can snap it off.
When you're gathering it, do you just pull it, or do you have to cut it?
You pull it. You go to a certain area. You just don't pull everything right there. You pick them. That's why it takes so long. You probably have to go all day to get a whole bunch of grass if you want to, worth a while to make one like that.
Where do you get the thread
from? The thread, mostly from material places where they sell material, or sometimes you can get from where the arts and crafts supply or materials. Sometimes they have that where they sell some yarn or.
I've been curious to know because I've noticed different baskets have different colors on them. Do the colors mean anything?
No, I don't think so. Not really. It just... I think it just depends on a person's taste or what's her favorite color. Or, and that's how I look at it because I noticed like some girls, they like brown and beige and tan, you know, they put like earth color or gray and like that. Then some of them really bright red and white or green or blue. And some of them like white and yellow and brown, you know. And I think it depends on the, that's what I also tell the girls that I'm not going to tell you how to pick those colors. After I will show it to you, then I want you to pick your own colors. I just want to see what, you know, what's, what color or what kind of colors they like. And you can learn a lot from a person by watching what kind of colors they pick.
What are your favorite colors?
Well, mostly I like mine is mix, and that's a thread has all kind of different colors. That's what I like. I think I had some when I was showing it that time. It has green, red, yellow, blue, orange, and pink, and turquoise. It's that kind. I like that, but mostly if I don't have that, I like brown and beige and tan. And then if I want to get bright, I like red and turquoise and pink and light. But what I like, another thing is that light green, dark green, and really dark green. And those three colors I like to work with. Or if I don't, I get brown, beige, light brown, then real dark brown. Those are four colors, comes out real good too. I used to like sometimes put a black in the baskets, but you don't ever hardly see me put a black thread in my basket, so it's, I don't really care for it. Unless a certain person asks for that color, like I would put some purple in it. I put lavender and light purple and dark purple. Some people ask for that, and that's a pretty color, I think. But I don't usually use a lot of purple or black unless I'm asked to put it in. And I like orange, I don't hardly use it unless a person asks me. Like one lady says, I want orange, and I want green, and I want black. And I put that in there because that's what she wanted. But I don't think I would put that together myself.
Do the Seminole people use colors, for example, at, you know, during when someone dies or when a baby is born, do colors come into it? You know, does somebody have to wear a certain color or not wear a certain color?
Well, when you have a child, the firstborn you have, when you have a child, when he's a baby, they want you to use a solid color. Mostly you can, yellow and white or light color. Then after three moons. When you give that child a haircut, then that's when you will go ahead and let him wear a print color and with the designs in it. Before then, you don't put any kind of patchwork in their clothes. Just let them wear solid. Then at that time, you can put a patchwork in it. Even you let them wear a little cap, you don't put a patchwork in. Then after that, as they get a certain age, you can go ahead and start using, you know, light colors. But like they always tell us that if you're not married, then you should use a like kind of light clothes. Even prant, not loud. Then after you get married, then you can make your own what you want. Then another thing is that if you become a widow or your husband died or something, then after you throw all your clothes away, you should wear black until you get married again, or either your husband's people tell you you're going to wear black all your life. You wear black all your life. But if they tell you so many years you can wear black and go on back to colors, you can do that. But that's a tradition on how they go about. But today, I think some people wear anything now. Then you shouldn't, you know, like when you're a young girl, you don't wear a lot of beads. You wear it so much, but you don't wear a lot. But as you grow older and you get married, and like you get more respect or more something, like you become a mother and more children, or as the years go on, that you can go ahead and wear a lot of beads. And you should never wear your hair loose. When you're a little girl, you wear your hair loose. When you become a teenager, you're already getting your hair up, then keep it that way. When you married, you keep it that way. Then the day if you lost your husband, then you can wear your hair down. Till they tell you when to put it up. But I don't know what they're doing today. Just let it go, yes. And that's how they used to tell us. And a lot of ladies still follow that tradition. That's the way. Some things you don't let it go. Then, like they said, if you go down the street with your hair loose and all that, you know, they won't have too much respect for you because you should be neat or something. Because the other people says only kind of a woman that walks down the road or goes somewhere with her hair loose was the ladies that, you know, like to go around everywhere. And what they in the Indians, they say loose woman. That's what they used to tell us, you know. Loose woman. I just don't know why loose woman. But today, you know, a lot of that is gone.
Mm-hmm.
But that's why every time you see older ladies have a lot of things that, you know, they still do the same thing and try to teach their young.
I had one question. I don't know. It looks like the tape may be ending, but I was curious about the doll.
I'll put another one.
Okay.